The Producers, featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews, industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dreen.
Hello, hello. Podcast time, obviously, because you're listening to it. Maybe you download on the site, whatever. Let's see here. I don't have a ton to do here in the intro. Two little pieces of business, I guess, really just to let you know, or a reminder, perhaps. I went ahead and simplified the entire website. The domain is now simply ryandreen.com, but producerspodcast.com still works. Ryan on the Radio, in fact, still works. But if you wanted to update your favorites, if you have any bookmarks, I should say, for the show feed or the main site, whatever you have, you can do that. If you want to reach out to me, or I should say business number two, if you want to reach out to me with names, people that you think should be on the show, I don't think I've mentioned this in the intro in a little while. I always love the request, especially if it's people I just simply don't know about. Don't be afraid to throw names at me, especially if you're thinking, hey, he's got to know about this guy, right? Or this gal, right? But toss them at me. I don't know everybody, that's for sure. RyanDreen@gmail.com. That's my simple Gmail address I'm happy to hand out. You can also hit the contact form at the website, which again is just simply RyanDreen.com. All right. I'd say that's enough. Plenty of shows that I'm working on, blah, blah, blah. Nobody to really mention as of yet. 100th episode coming up soon. But for now, the interview with Miles Hlivko. In fact, I'll mention his Twitter in the outset here. It's simply at Miles Hlivko, and that is Hlivko. I think I said his name correctly most of the time. Maybe not all the time, but let's start with some fabulous audio from Miles, and then we'll get into the interview.
Los Angeles, 500 years in the future.
I don't see anything yet.
No, just keep looking.
Anything over there?
Oh, wait, hold up.
Oh.
I just realized where we are. This is the stage. This is where it happened.
Where what happened?
Think, 2015.
Oh my God.
Wango Tango, 2015.
Getting all amped up, screaming, knowing all the words. Epic. Out of this world.
Wango Tango.
Oh my God, a tiger! Oh, wait, I'm at the zoo. Let's listen to 106.7 The D, whatever rocks, tiger!
Live every day like it's Taco Tuesday.
102.7 Kiss FM.
Look, lads, on the horizon, 12K a day.
Nice, enough booty for everyone.
Get your hands on some of this booty.
Win $1,000 every freaking hour. All you have to do is text the keywords in.
Listen for keywords. Text them in and take your cut of the 12K a day giveaways.
12K a day. Radio, I say.
Just keep it here for the keywords to text in for your shot at a grand.
It'll ding a ding dang. Your ding a long ling long. On air with Ryan Seacrest. In speakers now.
On 102.7 Kiss FM.
All right. We roll again with, he produces. It's still one of my favorite stations on planet Earth. I grew up with it, though. I love Kiss FM, always have, but why don't I say his name and I'll do my best. Miles Hlivko or Hlivko?
Yeah, nailed it.
Okay, so that was actually going to be, I was joking with you before we started here, and I kind of joked in my previous episode that I would just simply ask you how to do it, but I guess I got it all right. So say your name, though, so that everybody knows exactly, you know, how it's properly said.
Yeah, it's Miles Hlivko. So the H isn't, like, totally silent, but normally, like, if I'm going easy on people, I'll just say the H is silent. You know, you can leave it off, but it's almost like you just kind of breathe before you get to the L.
Yeah, cool. I heard Frost say your name a couple times when I chatted with him last, and I went, okay, wait, no, I know how to say it. I know how to say it, and then whatever. Anyway.
I had Hosier in here not too long ago, and he's an artist whose name everybody – will butcher, yeah. You know, he gets like Hosier,
yeah,
and all that. So we related on that level.
That's good. That's good. But he uses his H to the full extent.
Yeah.
You go 50% H. So, okay. Anyway, being completely serious, though, I did grow up in Los Angeles, and while most of my friends were listening to K-Rock, I would, you know, tune into it on occasion, but I just loved Kiss. I love Kiss. So, you know, how awesome is it to work at Kiss?
Oh, my God. This is a dream, or if not a dream job, the dream job. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I first learned what radio imaging was, I was listening to sort of like secondhand acquired John Frost stuff that from K-Rock. And through that, like, I got on to listening to Kelly stuff at Kiss. And I always dreamed, like, man, what would that even be like to be working at a station like that? And to be here now is just, it blows my mind. Like, yesterday I was just hanging out outside with my wife, and I wanted to call John Ivey and be like, dude, my life is so good now. I can't thank you enough for bringing me out here. But I don't know. He would have thought I was crazy, and he probably already does, so I didn't call.
Yeah, yeah. You may as well let people assume you're crazy and, you know, don't prove it often. Sometimes is a good rule. So it's as awesome as I could expect it would be. That's great. Where do I start? I mean, I've written here Cleveland. I don't actually know where you were born and raised. I'll ask you that. But on top of that, freaking Cleveland puts talent out there, man. What is the deal with Cleveland?
Well, there's a stand-up comedian, and I forget who it is off the top of my head, but it might be Jim Gaffigan, or I think it's Bill Burr, actually, has a bit about Ohio has the most astronauts of any state. And it's like, what is it about your state that makes people want to leave the fucking planet? and like, you know, I think people from the area have a good sense of humor about that stuff. Like, I love Ohio. I'm from Akron, Ohio. Same birthplace as LeBron James and the Black Keys, Devo. Marilyn Manson's from Canton, which is real close to there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. I think people from that area have a tendency to work really hard. You know, it's like a blue-collar Rust Belt area, and, you know, we're raised by usually either, like, farmers or factory workers and stuff, and so that it's a real grind mentality, and people work very hard. I don't know if it's, you know, a unique thing to have a mm-hmm. hardworking mentality, but my mom told me when I was considering moving out here that when she was pregnant with me, she was, you know, thinking about maybe moving to Los Angeles, and all her friends were like, you should totally do that. Just tell them you're from Ohio and they will hire you because people from Ohio work hard.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one of the mom stories. And, you know, there's probably some truth to that. But, yeah, I don't know. I love being from there, and I think it's instilled some good, hardworking values into me.
Yeah, well, before we get into your actual, you know, the chain of your events and your career, it is crazy, just from a radio perspective, and even from a radio imaging producer perspective. I don't even want to start listing names because I'm going to leave some people out, but there's a really long list of legendary people that have come from, or at least worked in, the Cleveland market, and you're one of them now, man.
Well, thank you for that, and like, well, I'm nervous just to be on this podcast, you know, seeing the list of people that you've had on here before. It's like, fuck, how am I going to live up to that? But yeah, I mean, it was kind of the same thing when I started at WMMS in Cleveland. You know, like, there was a, you know, that's a station with a ton of heritage and a long line of really fucking awesome imaging people. And I cuss a lot. I apologize. I've heard cussing on the podcast before. It's not like a PG thing, right?
No, I usually ignore it. I, don't, whatever. I mean, do
it. I just don't want to create an editing nightmare for you.
I don't know if I'd edit you or not. I probably will wait until I figure out if it's an issue or not. So anyway, don't worry about it. Talk how you talk. And, whatever, don't worry about it.
yeah, but, so when I started interning at, then Clear Channel Cleveland, Bob Coates was imaging WMMS, and he is phenomenal. He's crushing it at TAM and at Production Vault now. Prior to that, I think I have the order all messed up, but, you know, Cousin Deke, Mitch Todd, And, you know, Len Boom Goldberg being the voice of the station for, you know, 30 years. And when I first got to MMS and I started hearing the imaging in person, I was like, oh, like, I've heard this stuff in the car. And some of the stuff actually, like, stood out to me from just listening as a listener to the radio station. Like, there was a sweeper where John Wells says, "We think gun control means using both hands." And, you know, like, that's sort of like a bumper sticker line, but his delivery on it and the way that Deke produced it just sounded like really dark and kind of like affects you emotionally when you hear that. And so, yeah, there was some really big shoes to fill there when I started.
Yeah, and the market in general, too. A lot of other great talent has come from there. So it's cool. It's exciting. But you said you interned there. That wasn't literally your first radio job, was it? MMS Cleveland?
I was going to the Ohio Center for Broadcasting, and because, like, my plan for my whole life was to draw comic books for a living. And, I don't know. It wasn't working out. Like, I started getting positive form letters back, but they were still form letters, and I wasn't getting any work. Like, I think the most money I ever made drawing comic books was, like, when I was going to broadcasting school, I would draw, like, pinups of, like, X-Men female characters and sell them on eBay for, like, $5 or $10. so my mom was tired of me living in her house, and she went to the Ohio Center for Broadcasting and did mornings in Youngstown for like 15 years. She's on in Akron now. And so she talked me into
What is she on in Akron?
Yeah, my mom is Bobby Horvath. She's on WAKR, does middays talk there.
Oh, cool. So you had it in the blood. You never had a chance.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. So I started going there, and I was interning. I got an internship with Scott Glazer, who was imaging Mix 106.5 at the time. And so he brought me in and kind of showed me how to use Pro Tools. And I guess I got into it from there. And I would just produce stuff for fun. And I produced this comedy bit just to entertain myself that was like a car dealer spot. And the car dealer was saying, "If we can't get you approved for a loan, you can throw a baby off the roof." And so this guy comes up, and he's like, "Hey, we didn't get approved for the loan. It sucks." And he goes, "Here you go. Grab a baby out of this bucket and throw it out on the freeway, buddy." And so that was the whole bit. Like, the whole joke was just the sound effects of babies flying off of the roof and landing on the freeway and getting run over by semis. And so Scott played that for the afternoon guy on MMS at the time, who was Slats. And Slats loved it and started playing that. And that actually got me a gig for like 6 hours a week, getting paid to do bits for Slats. And that was my first production job, was doing the comedy bits.
Yeah.
And so through that and like learning imaging from Scott Glazer and, other awesome guys there like Bob Coates and AJ Allen, I started making demos. And I got pulled into Kevin Matheny's office at one point, and he was very enigmatic with the way that he spoke, and which I just thought was fascinating. And he is making this circular motion with his finger, and he says, "Forces are at work, and I may have a position for you. I need you to make a demo for each one of the six stations in this cluster." And so what was actually happening was Jay Bohannon was leaving imaging at WTAM. Bob Coates was moving from MMS to TAM, and they were thinking of putting me in the MMS slot, but he couldn't, you know, this was all confidential, so he couldn't tell me. So he just said, "Make a demo for each of the formats." So I waited for everybody to leave, and highly unethical, I don't recommend anybody do this, but I snuck into everybody's studios after they left and took voiceover sessions off of their computers so that I could produce them with my own production and stuff. And I made all six demos that night and slid them under Kevin's door so it'd be waiting for him in the morning when he got in. And short version is things worked out from there.
Things worked out, right. And, there's a lot of things to discuss from that. do you the late Kevin Matheny now, sadly, but do you, just for those that might not know who he is, would you like to tell people who he is?
Kevin Matheny was not so flatteringly portrayed in the Howard Stern Private Parts movie by Paul Giamatti. And yes. His character name in the movie, which I hear was like, it was like a combination of Kevin Matheny and another one of Howard's bosses, but he was referred to as Pig Vomit in the movie, and on the air, it was actually Pig Virus. But
yes.
Yeah, man, if,
yes.
if Kevin didn't like you, he would not mince words about that. You know, a lot of people were on his good side, and if not for him, WMMS might have been blown up, because he made a huge coup and got Rover's Morning Glory from our competition across the street at 92.3 and brought Rover over, and MMS has been killing it since then. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a huge move.
That's funny. There's so many of these little connections. When I first started in radio, Rover's actually Mike Crank. But Rover's real, his entire show was kind of like, oh, wait a minute, I want to do stuff like that. But he was on nights at the Peak in Denver, and that's when I would hear him.
Okay.
And then, yeah, so then when Stern left and they started filling him up all over the place, and then Rover, anyway, that's funny that you were there when he actually went to MMS.
Yeah. And I love those guys. I still, do like some funny stuff here and there for, Rover's Morning Glory. And, like, listen to their podcasts and watch the TV stuff. I love Rover and them.
That's awesome. Are you, this is really random and odd, but, and he's at your competition, but are you familiar with Mike Crank by chance?
Yeah, he's, I know he's really good friends with Rover, and, you know, I listen to K-Rock
right.
and Jack FM when I can. You know, Crank, yeah. Crank's a genius.
Yeah, cool. So the Kiss gig, let's just move ahead to that, because, you know, I like hearing the, it's almost like the professional meet cute. You know, how Ivy must have said, hey, buddy, you know, or however it goes. But, you know, seriously, how did it go to get you to Kiss?
Well, actually, a few years ago, it sort of came up, and I wasn't ready for it at all. Like, I had heard that there was something going on in L.A., and Kelly called me and said, hey, like, this is what's going on. We want to bring you out to Kiss. And I was like, oh, man, like, I'm not ready to move right now. Like, I was really scared about, you know, moving to a really big city. I had just bought a house, and, I got that crazy tax credit. So if I tried to sell my house then, I would have owed 10 grand back to the government. And I was just too nervous about it and wasn't mentally prepared for the pressure of it, I don't think. And so... passed on that, and Forrest Martin came in and, you know, was killing it, and now he's killing it over at Apple Music. And so when he left, the position was vacant again. And at that point, I was totally ready. You know, like, I had some more experience with doing the national programming group stuff for iHeartRadio. And so that had calmed my nerves a bit as far as, like, working on gigantic projects. And, you know, doing the iHeartRadio Music Festival stuff and, you know, national promos that are on in, like, a bunch of different markets, I think, calm my nerves about that. And I think to some extent I was kind of ready for a new city to explore and, like, to get out of my comfort zone career-wise and come out here and start working for KISS. So I was super excited about it when they called me about it then.
And so obviously, well, you just said Kelly contacted you about it, but was it really, is that a John Ivy decision? I mean, is he, at the end of the day, he was the wall and you had to, did you know him before that? Or was this like, you know, a first time meeting? You had to kind of impress him and really show him what you were all about?
Yeah, it was my first time meeting him. Like, I knew of him, obviously, because of his involvement in, like, national iHeart stuff. We have world premieres and all that, you know, we'll get emails from John Ivy. And but yeah, that was my first time meeting him, was when I came out here for the interview. And part of the interview process, I had to write, voice, and produce some stuff to play for him, and you know, just to kind of see what I could come up with on the fly. But yeah, I mean, like, we hit it off right off the bat. I think, you know, like, he's super easy to get along with, and he's like a no BS kind of person, and I tend to gel with those people pretty well.
totally off topic, but I was at CRS this past year. I think it was probably my favorite panel, although there were a lot of great ones, but I don't even know if you know what that is. It's the Country Radio Seminar. Anyway, John Ivey was on a panel with some non-country people talking about the format.
Okay.
And he was probably my favorite person. Just, but it's literally what you just said. No BS. Here's the way it is. Like it or not.
Yeah.
Very impressive individual. And I think it would be a pretty awesome experience to be able to work for him.
Oh, yeah. And like to hear his stories about the people that he's worked with and, you know, the experiences that he's had with mega superstars, you know, telling stories about hanging out with, you know, David Bowie and Frank Zappa. And yeah, it's very inspiring to work with somebody who is as good as he is. And it's super fun to work with somebody who, like, I don't know, has cool stories to tell and doesn't mm-hmm. give a shit about busting your balls.
You know, we could talk about day to day at KISS. I guess I'd be interested just to give people a feel for the environment, you know, those that have never really had a gig like you have. Is it an 8 hour a day job? Is it, you know, you're working weekends? Is it, you might be working overnights on some projects? Give me a feel for how things go there.
I don't know. It's, I sort of was, expecting questions like that, but I honestly don't really keep track of stuff like that. You know, sure. Ideally I try to work, you know, from like 7:30 or 8 in the morning until, you know, 5-ish in the afternoon. And like, I barely ever leave my studio. I'm in here. Like, I eat lunch while I'm working, so that yeah. I don't have to, you know, spend too much time away from home and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, there are 16 hour days, and it's kind of hard to quantify, because like, what do you consider yeah. work? Like, if I'm at home and I'm just kind of sitting around writing stuff, like, is that considered work? Or, you know, cause it's stuff that I'm going to use, when I get back to the studio. And, so if, I mean, I'm constantly writing stuff. I work at least a little bit every single day.
I'd say, to give people a better idea of just kind of the environment. I mean, so, you know, you're kind of in the office, quote unquote, you're in your studio, you know, by 8-ish in the morning, and you never really leave before 5. But generally speaking, you're rarely in there grinding out production until 2 in the morning.
That's pretty rare. Like, the first month I was out here, there hadn't been like a dedicated imaging person here for at least a couple months, I think. So stuff was pretty stale, and I was trying to just re-image the entire station in that first month. So that first month was pretty much like 12 to 16 hour days every single day. Mm. But mm-hmm. I also was out here by myself, and my wife hadn't moved out yet. So I didn't really have anything else to do. So it was fine. And I was kind of, you know, trying to feel out what the voice of the station was going to be. So it was a lot of work, you know, right off the bat. Yeah. Since then, you know, I've had long days, but they're an exception and not the norm, I would say.
And then, you know, meetings, is it regular, you know, do you have writing meetings with, you know, John or other people at the station? Do you work pretty solo? Do you have all of your work need to go through a committee before it hits the air? You know, how are those things worked out at a station like KISS these days?
Well, we have promo meetings every week. As far as creative sweepers, I usually try to run those by John when I get a chance. And I don't send scripts. I'll just produce them up and, like, take a CD down and listen to them or email them to them or something like that. But stuff that is, that I know is going to be safe, or stuff that I feel like urgently needs to be updated, I'll just throw it on the air, and, you know, it's fine. I've been told to pull like 2 things in the past year that I've been here. So I think that's a pretty good track record so far.
Yeah, no, I mean, unless you let like the C word get through somehow, that would be bad, but
that would be super bad.
Yeah, it wouldn't be ideal. Cool. I mean, we could probably talk, you know, day-to-day stuff, but that could probably get a little tedious and boring. I'm a little more interested. It sounds like when you started out, you were very creative. You were obviously on the creative side of the spectrum. And my spectrum is kind of like, you know, 100% creative on one side, 100% technical on the other, and I think we got to find a balance. So where do you lean now? Have you become more technical? Do you still kind of stay wacky and stay over on the creative side? Where do you categorize yourself?
I think for the most part, I keep things pretty loose. Like, in terms of the technical side of production, The most intensive part of that is processing a voiceover, because other than that, if you have high quality sound effects and high quality music, like that stuff has already been mixed and is basically ready to go. Unless you have like a super loud lead instrument in a music bed that you need to bring down a little bit, then you do kind of like a scoop EQ around the 800 hertz range to make a hole for the voice to punch through. But other than that, it's not like music production where you're trying to balance the mix and fit all of these different voices and instruments under your headroom. You know, like I think imaging is not as complicated as that. And if you make it overcomplicated, sometimes it can end up sounding worse, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Tell us a little bit about, let's talk tech real fast. First of all, would you categorize yourself as a pretty, you know, big time audiophile? Are you way into, you know, all of the plugins and very technically savvy when you're in your mix, you know, as far as the things you're putting on your master bus?
Depends who you're comparing me to. Compared to Drew Hall, no.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of experiment with different compressors and limiters and pick the ones that I think sound best. And I don't know what kind of programming magic makes one sound different than another, but there's...
But they do sound different, and you know that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, what was the question?
Well, no, well, you know, you're kind of answering it, I'd say. You actually brought up Drew's name, so you probably know your way around, you know, aux buses and chaining, you know, comps and EQs together on your master and all that.
Yeah,
but
yeah, that kind of came out of necessity because I didn't have enough RAM to run all of the plugins that I wanted simultaneously. So that's how I learned to route the VO channels to an aux bus.
Sure. And you already brought up Drew's name, but are there other people, though, that you still kind of look up to, at least on the technical side, where you go to for assistance or to find out about new software or maybe even hardware that you'd like to use?
Oh, yeah. The whole Tampa echelon of Drew, Eric Chase, Nick Daly, those guys, I don't know that it gets any better than them, seriously. And, you know, if you want a clean-sounding mix that's as loud as it can possibly be, they're the ones to talk to. And, like, Nick Daly was posting some stuff about the RX audio cleanup suite of plugins, and he's got, like, the mega, you know, for TV dialogue audio version of that. But I got the cheap one. And even with that plugin, those plugins are amazing. Like, they're so easy to use, and they sound so much better than like what we're used to as far as noise reduction. The the declipper is unbelievable. I didn't think that was ever even possible. But I actually tweeted at them. I was like, "There's no magic wand for bad audio is no longer an excuse because of the stuff that they did. Like, it's crazy."
Yeah, no, it's totally true. I might have actually, I can't remember, I was looking for something in that realm, and it might have been something I read from him or others, but yeah, I grabbed the same thing. Totally agree. That is a great tool for people to have for a rather good price.
Yeah, and especially like around the holidays, they'll put it on sale for like $80.
There you go. Exactly. I was going to say under $100, you can grab yourself that. You could also spend thousands on restoration type plugins as well if you want to. As far as, you know, technology you have going in the studio, you already mentioned Pro Tools. Are you a Mac or a PC guy?
Neither, both. I have a
whatever
iMac at the studio because that's, you know, what they got for me. At home, I have a couple of PCs that I built myself, and one of them was like my dedicated gaming PC, and one of them was my production PC. But when I upgraded to Pro Tools 12, the new software structure doesn't work on the Core 2 Duo processor, so I had to move it over to my i7 rig. But it still was a great move. Like, the offline bounce with the 64-bit Pro Tools is a game changer for sure.
Yeah, big fan. Love the version 12. There's a lot of other little features that are fun. You know, it's the little things that they do, though, because I'm kind of a nerd. I think it sounds like you're a bit of one, too. Just dragging tracks around the way that they've kind of more elegantly coded it so you can see the waveform as you move a little bit better and where you're going to be dropping. Little stuff like that I really enjoy.
It's cool that they're more open with the interfaces that you can use now, too. Because I'm still using my MBox 2 Mini as my interface on that.
I almost joked and said, you're not using an M-Box 2, are you?
Well, you know, I'm not recording orchestras at home. It's either like a guitar or a microphone, so.
Yeah. I mean, it's always the number one rule above everything else. If it works for you, it's fine, and that's all that matters.
Well, before I upgraded to 12, I was playing around with some other DAWs to see if I could go like a cheaper route versus getting like new Pro Tools and new Waves plugins and all of that. So I was playing around with Reaper for a while, and that is actually like if all I were doing was music, I think I would stick with that. Because that's super powerful and really cheap, and the developers are constantly updating it with new features, and they listen to the community with stuff that they want. But it doesn't have the destructive audio, like the audio suite that Pro Tools has. Like you have to integrate a third-party kind of audio editor to be able to do stuff like that, which is kind of clunky. And I think that's pretty essential to imaging.
I absolutely agree, and I had not... I opened Reaper once or twice, and I just really, really enjoy Pro Tools. And I thought, what am I going to do? I'm going to put myself through hours trying to get used to a new DAW, and then why am I doing that? I'm just going to stay. So I didn't bother. I really don't know what it has, but I've heard a lot of great things about it.
Yeah, I'm the same way with new software. Like I have Ableton, which I got like a year ago so that I could start learning how to use it to use for the WBN fireworks in Cincinnati, because there's a lot of like beat matching and music mixing and stuff like that. I was like, oh, Ableton would probably be super useful for that. But I just, you know, I'm not motivated to take the time to do all the tutorials and learn it and stuff. I really need to, but maybe with that deadline coming up, I'll be motivated to take a crash course.
Yeah, for sure. I know with music, I've now heard it way too much to not bring it up. Have you? I don't know if you like to make music, but Logic is kind of becoming the end-all be-all. Like, if you are just making music, you're using Logic. There's, you know, that's kind of the consensus.
Yeah, Logic is good. I got into production because of music. Like, when I was a teenager, I listened to a lot of industrial music, so like Nine Inch Nails, Frontline Assembly, Ministry, stuff like that. And I would hear the music that they were making, and I'd say, wow, that sounds really cool. I want to learn how to do that. And so that's how I got into the whole like editing and audio side of things. And like, I still work on music personally, like just for fun and stuff. I was in a metal band for a while, and our drummer was the producer, and he used Logic and would, you know, throw shade at me for using Pro Tools and stuff. And I mean, you can pretty much do anything with any audio editor. Like, they're all like Pro Tools, Reaper, Logic, Audition. Like, you can do all the same stuff with all of them. They're just sort of like, it's like learning a different language, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or even just different dialect of the same language.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay, great. What other tools do you have in your studio that we should know about? Software plugins or anything else, you know, some awesome audio destructive plugin that you love, or what are some things you use every day?
Well, I know that Frost brought this one up, but Speakerphone is really good and a huge time saver.
Yeah.
Because like if you want to emulate a certain kind of speaker or microphone or environment, you know, normally you'd have to go through all kinds of EQing and dynamics processing, reverb, you know, delay, all that. And they just have it figured out for you already. It, you know, just plug and play with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Other than that, I've got, hang on, let me, I've got,
pull open a session.
No, I've got some mobile recording things that I'm a big fan of.
Oh, cool. You mean like literally to get audio on the street?
Yeah.
Are we talking iPhone apps, or are we talking a piece of hardware? Okay.
I've got this Marantz old school field recorder. It's like the size of a VCR. But, you know, it's got phantom power. You can plug two mics into it. You can do RCA ins and outs. And like, it's old and kind of embarrassing to carry around, but I got it for $70 on eBay. And you can put a humongous card into it, and you could throw it down a flight of stairs and it'll still work.
Nice.
But I did actually come into the 21st century recently, and I got this Tascam DR40, which has like stereo built-in mics, which you need to put a muff on because they take so much of a beating from the wind. but it also has phantom power for two mics onto that. And when I'm plugging in a mic, I just go with a SM57 because those are great for listener audio because they won't pick up, you know, a ton of background noise. And the stereo mics on it that are built in actually are really good. I took that to Wango. Wango Tango is our big summer concert. Yeah. And I took this thing out there and recorded the crowd cheering for the different acts, and it sounds incredible.
Wow, that's awesome. I was going to ask, what kind of, you know, listener audio or outside audio are you getting? Are you, what from the guy that works at KISS, what is he getting?
I try to get stuff that is just going to be really useful, you know, because like most listeners aren't going to have a ton of, you know, like they don't have an attention span to do a whole session with you. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So I get the basics. I get them saying the slogan and a lot of like service stuff that if you just have announcers saying it constantly, it gets kind of repetitive and stuff. But if you have different listeners saying KISS FM is LA's number one hit music station, you know, like that's a different voice every time and kind of helps break things up. And if you have a, you know, a positioner like that, which has a ton of words in it, I feel like having different voices makes it seem shorter than it is, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. More dynamic for sure.
Yeah.
What is your strategies for getting good audio? In other words, where do you like to get the audio and what type of people do you key on where you know, oh, that person's going to do, you know, they're going to deliver?
The best places to get audio are at station events because they're your P1s, like they're already into your station and they're probably going to be excited to be on the radio station. So I literally just go to Wango Tango and Jingle Ball and spend a few hours going around and talking to as many people as I can. And and what I do to kind of break the ice and make people feel more comfortable and also to kind of key in on the people who are going to be, you know, like superstars is I'll just go around and be like, okay, finish this line for me, 102.7. And the people who get really excited and go, KISS FM, like, I know that they're going to be awesome. I actually tried something recently that did not work out with listener audio. I went to Wango Tango, and I wrote a bunch of, like, attitude liners. And so I was going around, and I had them, like, cut up on separate strips of paper. And I would say, okay, reach into here and just read whatever that says as soon as you open it up. And first of all, they wouldn't just do that. Like, they always read it first, and then they would be like, what does this even mean? You know, so I thought that was going to be funny, but it totally failed.
Didn't work out. All right, so everybody make a note of that.
Yeah.
No. So do you go out very often, though, or just pretty much the two times a year? Or are you going out regularly?
If I need, like, supplemental stuff in between, we normally have, like, an in-studio performance here at the station or over at the iHeart Theater, and there's a ton of listeners at both of those that I can grab if needed.
Nice. As far as sort of non-radio imaging, you already brought up a lot, though. I mean, obviously, you have or had your hands in a lot of different things. But what else do you do? Are you you're voicing something? I mean, are you doing that for a living? Are you producing other stations? Are you producing non-radio related audio? What else do you have going on?
I image several stations in like other iHeart markets. And I voice a handful of other ones. I have a fully functional setup at home, so I'm able to produce and voice stuff at home as well. As far as, like, non-radio audio, I don't know. I work on music for fun, but my problem is, like, I don't have a ton of time to devote to stuff. And usually when I'm done working, I don't want to stare at Pro Tools anymore. So it's tough for me to work on music, even though I want to, just because it ends up feeling like work. I think if I just had like an acoustic guitar and a couple microphones in front of me and I could just kind of jam, maybe I would complete songs more often, but I don't have an acoustic guitar, so that doesn't happen.
Okay. What's your, you know, how many stations do you do and how many do you voice? That just general numbers to give people a feel of your day or your situation.
I think if you combine them, I want to say like a 15-ish. And that's not including, obviously, the like national iHeartRadio stuff. I do the national iHeartRadio alternative stuff.
Oh, you do a national alternative. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that weird or good, or do you like that, the fact that you're kind of CHR most of the time and then alternative on the national scale?
Oh, yeah. Like, I love doing all kinds of different formats. When I was in Cleveland, I was doing active rock, talk, sports, CHR, alternative. And so, yeah, like, you know, I mean, people are multifaceted. And so, you know, like the top 40 side of me is one side of me. The alternative thing is one side of me. Like when I get to do active rock, like I do for WBN in Cincinnati, like that stuff is super, super duper aggressive and active rock. And, you know, just like when I was in Cleveland doing stuff for Rover's Morning Glory, like that's about as aggressive as Imogen gets, I think. Like so when I was doing stuff for Rover, I would intentionally write the meanest things that I could think of, hoping, like, it was my goal to get at least one pulled off the air from each batch. And
were you typically successful at that, or did they always say, nope, love it, keep being mean, get meaner?
I mean, I can think of a handful that got pulled. So it wasn't every batch, nice. But that's what I went for each round.
Yeah. Now, I know it might not be your, how do I word this? Maybe not your favorite format. Oftentimes the format we are best at is not actually our favorite. Is that true for you or not true? And what is it?
I don't know. I love doing top 40 imaging, and I actually like the music on top 40 more than I do active rock. Like active rock imaging probably is easier for me to write because I'm in the demo. But far as like what station I would like to listen to, you know, I like top 40 music, and I like listening to how it's produced. I think that you can learn some, vocal production techniques from pop music and sort of like the way that things are structured and written is interesting to me. But I think the hardest format for me is sports, because I'm not a huge sports guy, and it's hard for me to make it sound cool when I'm just super not into it, you know?
Yeah, I understand. I could see how that would be if people hate country music and they work in a cluster and they're told you're imaging the country format now. It might be tough to think you're doing good work over there.
Yeah.
If you don't like it. Yeah.
But I guess to some extent, you know, like sports, you can basically just kind of image as the same attitude as you would a rock station. And that's, you know, I still do sports stuff, and that's kind of how I end up doing it. But when it comes to like talking about stats and stuff, I just, you know, my eyes glaze over.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, I do want to, I'm going to bring up writing again real quick. We touched on it a little bit, but it's so important. For you, what works? Where do you write? How do you write? When do you write? Can you write well any time?
No. When I'm stressed out, it's really hard to write, and because I can't focus. So I try to actively manage my stress and just make sure that if something is stressing me out, I need to address it and fix it before it starts affecting my work, because writing is such a huge part of what I do. And so that's one part of it. Another part of it is get the ideas down while they're hot. You know, if I get an idea for a line, I'll either email it to myself or make a note in my phone, or sometimes if I'm not sure about a joke, I'll post it on Twitter and sort of gauge people's reaction on it and see if people think it's funny or not. So that sort of works as a scratch pad, where when I need some ideas, I can go back to my Twitter feed and look if there's any jokes on there that I might not have used yet. But other times, I'll just say, okay, I'm going to write now, and I'm not going to stop writing until I have 15 sweepers that are funny. And
so you kind of do the prisoner solution, lock yourself somewhere and don't let yourself out until you win.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you have to minimize your email so the notifications stop distracting you, and just focus on seeing where the train of thought takes you.
Yeah. That's cool. It's hard to talk about writing. I even said this in the very last interview I did. I find it's a little difficult. It's one of those things where you would say, I don't know, I just do it. You know what I mean? Like, it's, how do you explain to be a good writer, right? Or maybe you've got the answer.
Well, if you want to be a better writer, you have to read other people's stuff and be inspired by things. You know, like if you spend your entire life in the studio not talking to anybody, you're probably going to run out of juice pretty quickly. And so that goes back to Dave Fox's tip of live like a listener. You know, you have to go to movies, you have to go on vacations, you got to go to the beach, you got to go to Home Depot and run errands and shit and like live life. And that's where the ideas come from.
Yeah. And certainly station events. Another thing that's come up, going to the events, which some producers might not even, you know, it doesn't make sense, but literally just showing up and standing there can be worth its weight in gold.
Last year, my first experience at Wango Tango really opened my eyes to what, I mean, obviously I knew this was a huge gig before I took it, but I had been here for like a month and went to Wango Tango for the first time. And, you know, I have got a working badge, so I'm able to go literally anywhere, like dressing rooms, backstage, you know, whatever. And so I'm just walking around and taking this all in. And, you know, here's like the StubHub Center completely sold out with people who will cheer for the name of your radio station. And, you know, like that is just like, it was unbelievable to like kind of be standing on the loading ramp, going out onto the field and see the like intro that I produced up on the Jumbotron. It was really humbling. And, like afterward, Ivy pulled me aside. He's like, yeah, you're starting to get it now. This is the big time. And I was like, yeah, I get it. This is huge.
This is the big time. Yeah, I guess it is. Wow. That's awesome. Let's round it out. I know you're a busy guy. You're getting, you know, you got a station to run over there. To kind of round it out though, as you're one of, you know, there's a lot of groups of people that come on this podcast, and one of them is your group where you sort of showed up where you were, and you just worked your ass off. And so you didn't have to like bounce around the country a bunch of times. You know, what's your advice on how it worked for you? Why did it work for you? Why are you at Kiss FM today?
I've looked up to Malcolm Riker a lot, you know, for my whole career. He was one of the guys that, like got me into doing what I do. And, if you want to talk about like being a team player and having career longevity and, you know, like he's just such like an awesome dude to work with. And, so I, try to keep that in mind. Like what would Malcolm do, you know? And, what Malcolm would not do is like be a pain in somebody's ass. And, you know, so I just try to be easy to work with and work hard. And I hate to say no. Like, I have to say no sometimes. But, you know, I was in Cleveland for 13 years, and there was a lot of branching out and taking on side work and trying to make other people's jobs easier. And I think that's how you get a good reputation in such a small industry as radio, where everybody knows everybody. And, you know, word spreads pretty fast if you're easy to work with or not so easy to work with. And, so I think you just got to have a good attitude and love radio. You know, the day I stop feeling lucky to be doing what I'm doing for a living is the day that I'll retire, because what's the point at that point?
Yeah, man. Awesome. Great. Love to end it on that note. Although nobody wants to see you retire, especially not now. I think you're a little too young. I think.
Oh yeah, I've got way more to do.
Miles Hlivko.
Thank you.
I said it correctly, I think.
Thanks for having me on. Like, it seriously means a lot to me. And I listened to some of my buddies who have been on previous podcasts, and I have to thank Frost and Drew Hall for saying nice things about me.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. you've been on my list. I probably should have had you on before. You know what it was actually with you? I had planned to get you on as kind of one of these, you know, long time in the same place guys. And then you took the job at Kiss, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to go after him 5 minutes after he got in the door over there. So
yeah, I was still terrified, like deer in the headlights when I first got here.
Yeah, I know how it is. You know, I had the kind of the big gig at one point, and it was like, oh my God, they're going to find out I'm a fraud. Like, this is horrible. Yeah. What have I done? You know, and you just get through it. Then it turns out you're not as bad as you think. And they, anyway, how do people reach out to you? Where are you at? Twitter, Instagram, et cetera?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I think it's just my name. Hang on one sec.
Okay.
At @MILESHLIVKO. And that's probably the best place to do it. Like, I don't really, cool. like, I'm on Facebook, but I don't really check it super often.
Yeah, well, you're also not 45. Well, maybe you are, but still.
I'm 35.
Good. I almost said that. And I'm like, hey, man, what if he is 45? I don't think you are, though, but that would you'd look great for 45 if you were 45.
I agree. Okay. I look great. Even better for 60.
Yeah. Miles Slivko on Twitter. Otherwise, don't bother him. That's where you find him. Anyway, that'll put a cap on it. That's just such a professional way for me to end this podcast. Miles, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, a year late, but congrats on the KISS gig.
Thank you.
Here's to many decades there and to all the great stuff for you in the future. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm going to listen to your backlog of podcasts while I'm stuck in LA traffic.
Yeah, great. Hopefully it doesn't make you drive into a pole.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.